אתם עם SBS בעברית.
Professor Ben Saul is a returning guest to SBS Hebrew, and he's the Chalice International Law at the University of Sydney and the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Promotion and Protection of Human Rights and Fundamental Freedoms whilst countering terrorism. Professor Ben Saul, thank you so much for returning to SBS Hebrew.
Good to be with you.
So, Professor, how extraordinary is it for Australia to expel an ambassador? Is this as serious as it sounds, or is it more hullabaloo than we're giving it credit for?
It's certainly an unprecedented step. Since 1945, Australia hasn't expelled a diplomat with the rank of ambassador. We've certainly expelled some more junior diplomatic staff, but this is a pretty extraordinary diplomatic step to throw out the most senior representative in the country. So it certainly sends a pretty strong signal, at least a symbolic signal, of just how alarmed Australia is about the conduct that the Iranians have been committing here in Australia.
Do you think that this expulsion is unprecedented? And do you think that there were potentially other techniques that the Australian government could have deployed in dealing as seriously, but in a private capacity, with the Iranian ambassador?
Yeah, it's certainly a difficult political tightrope to walk, because Australia maintains diplomatic relations with Iran, unlike some other Western countries, including the United States. There are certain advantages to doing that, because you can maintain a direct dialogue with the government, and that can be helpful in resolving other kinds of disagreements, whether that's political prisoners in Iran or Iran's conduct in relation to other countries or other sorts of interests. So there is, of course, a price for Australia too in expelling a diplomat and creating that kind of rift. But the Australian government has obviously determined that it's worth it in this case, because the activities of the Iranians had crossed such an important line and were really quite destabilizing here in Australia. I mean, attacks on the Jewish community, violent attacks, which could have endangered life. And so Australia wanted to send a very stark signal to Iran about all of this.
Do you think that resorting to calling the ambassador persona non grata along with three other diplomats implies that the embassy did in fact have knowledge of what had happened when these attacks were happening in Australia?
It might do, not necessarily. I mean, you would hope that an ambassador who's the head of the mission would be aware of all of the activities of Iran's personnel here in Australia, including the activities of any intelligence officials who've been posted here. That would be the usual practice, unless these activities were being somehow directed from abroad through other channels and cutting the embassy out of that loop. But ordinarily, an ambassador would be briefed on the kinds of intelligence and security operations being run by the other parts of government, particularly if they were taking place through personnel based here in Australia and not being done remotely through electronic means.
How long could this go on for? Could it be in perpetuity that there's no Iranian ambassador in Australia, or is the absence of an Iranian ambassador specified for Ambassador Ahmed Zadeghi?
Questions of diplomatic representation are really discretionary political decisions. And so declaring somebody persona non grata means that they're no longer recognized as a diplomatic agent here in Australia, and they have a short period of time to leave the country. That's not to say they could not be accepted again in the future. But if that were to happen, then they would have to be accredited through the usual process all over again. That's a process where Australia can say yes or no to somebody being proposed as an ambassador or a diplomatic representative. So Australia doesn't seem to have given any kind of time frame on this. It might depend upon how Iran reacts to all of this, whether the Australians feel confident that this kind of activity won't recur again. If Iran receives this signal and decides to change its behaviour, And if not, I mean, it could be a much longer running process, which could disrupt the maintenance of diplomatic relations over a significant period of time.
And do you perceive that the attacks that had happened in Australia, allegedly from Iran, are an attack on Australia or an attack on Israel?
Well, I think it's both in a way. I mean, the Australian Jewish community are Australians. They're, you know, part and parcel of our community like anybody else. And so, of course, an attack on them is an attack on the country as a whole and its tradition of multicultural pluralism. And so I think that's why the government has been taking it so seriously. It's probably also got, you know, the objective of somehow trying to disrupt, you know, political relations, maybe between Australia and Israel. And certainly that's been a consequence of anti-Semitism more broadly. I mean, not just Iranian attacks, but the rise of anti-Semitic attacks by others in the community as well. You know, if that was its goal, it has been effective. The Israeli government has been very critical of Australia's reaction to anti-Semitic incidents, suggesting the authorities haven't taken it seriously enough, gone far enough in the response. The Australian government, you know, denies that that's the case, but the point is it has led to this heightened tension in the Australian-Israeli relationship as well.
And do you think Prime Minister Albanese's reaction to expelling the Iranian diplomats as well as the ambassador could potentially pave the way for a rapprochement between Israel and Australia?
Well, I think that relationship involves a whole lot of other issues. I mean, it's not just about anti-Semitism. It's about the way in which Australia perceives that Israel is conducting the war in Gaza. And Australia has been very clear. It thinks there are some pretty significant violations of international law and the way that Israel has been conducting that campaign. So I think no single issue would lead to a kind of full restoration of relations as long as the principal driver in all of this, the principal irritant in the relationship, which is the war in Gaza, as well as the broader question of Palestinian statehood, which is also come to the fore recently. I mean, they're the bigger picture issues, I think, and anti-Semitism is incidental to the larger issues that are going on.
What would you say would encourage the Iranian government to allegedly carry out attacks like these on foreign soil?
Yeah, so the Iranian government has been pretty active in interfering in a whole series of countries, actually, on a whole range of issues, not just this one, and not just directed towards Israel. It's got a pretty significant track record of harassing and intimidating and even attacking and threatening the lives of political dissidents, journalists, human rights defenders, essentially Iranian communities in exile that are critical of the government. So this is part of a much broader pattern, I'd say, which many states have been concerned about. And in fact, just in recent weeks, about 14 countries signed a joint statement criticizing Iran's campaign of death threats, foreign interference, intimidation, harassment of all kinds of Iranian exiles and organizations in other countries. So I think there is growing pressure on Iran to end this kind of behavior. Expelling ambassadors is one thing. I mean, lots of countries also have sanctions on Iran. Australia's also proposed the further step to join a small but potentially growing number of countries that have listed the Iranian Revolutionary Guards Corps as a terrorist organization. That would require a legislative change in Australia because under the current law, a terrorist group is a non-state group. Whereas this is essentially proposing to list as terrorist a whole part of the Iranian government's security services.
Professor, how does that change Australia's relationship with the IRGC if they're part of the government and they're also a listed terrorist entity?
It's a pretty dramatic step in a way, because it would unlock for Australia all of the counterterrorism powers that come with listing a group as terrorist. So that includes potentially, you know, certain kinds of criminal offences. So it's a, you know, it's a crime under Australian law to be a member of a terrorist organisation. So that overnight would mean over 100,000 members of the IRGC are suddenly terrorists, according to Australian law. That's pretty unusual, because in interstate relations, it's pretty rare historically for state organs to be listed as terrorist organizations. There are very, very few, you know, foreign armies that are called terrorist, even though they may be using terrorist tactics. That's really because there are traditionally different legal rules and methods for dealing with state violence, and terrorist violence is generally targeted at the conduct of non-state actors. Whether it's enforceable, I think, is an important question. I mean, as I said, yeah, well, so the question is, although it potentially creates criminal offences in relation to that organisation, foreign states have immunities before Australian domestic courts. So on the one hand, the law saying they're terrorists, but if you tried to prosecute them in an Australian court, the Iranian government could just say, well, they're, you know, they're members of the Iranian state officials, therefore they have immunity from criminal prosecution. That is the position under international and Australian law at the moment. So it would, if we tried to prosecute and disregarded immunity, then that would lead to Australia violating its international obligations to respect foreign immunities. Listing can also potentially result in sanctions being imposed on the terrorist organization. But as I mentioned, that doesn't really add much, because Iran's already under sanctions and you already have the capacity to do that to states anyway. So I think it is really a largely symbolic step, but it could lead to, for example, terrorist prosecutions of organized criminal actors whom Iran engages or pays or orders to commit these kinds of attacks in Australia. So that would be, I think, an added value on the criminal side. Look, already those people can be prosecuted for arson or property damage or endangering life, you know, all the kind of ordinary criminal offences. But it does give you a whole bunch of extra terrorism offences, and some of those are much more extensive than ordinary criminal offences.
That's very interesting. And does it depend on what your cadre is within the IRGC? Say, if someone from that ranking wanted to come to Australia, would that mean that they would be rejected depending on their seniority within the IRGC?
For criminal prosecution, that wouldn't make a difference, because as long as the act you carried out was done on behalf of the Iranian government, you know, even if it's illegal under Australian law, you'd still get immunity. It's like it's very similar to diplomatic immunities. You know, you can, if you're a diplomat, you can speed in Canberra and you can't be arrested and or prosecuted for driving offences. So it's really the same thing for other kinds of state officials as well.
Fascinating stuff, Professor Bensall. Thank you so much for joining us again on SBS Hebrew.
No worries. Good to be with you.
עקבו אחרינו והפיצו אותנו דרך דף הפייסבוק שלנו.